This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, hot March Madness takes for the casual fan. I'm not here to dig into the rosters of all the teams. I'm not here to break down the X's and O's of the upcoming Sweet 16 games. There's plenty of that out there.
What are you, Charles Barkley?
Just the practically. I'm better than Charles Barkley. At least
I'm not in here to know anything about any of these teams whatsoever.
He gets paid way more to do that than I do. That's for sure. We'll get to him in a second. He'll be mentioned in this piece, in this segment. McNeese got knocked out, I think, Seth, just in time. Just in time for the Amir Aura Khan experience.
Yeah.
To not turn into something. We know how quickly America can turn on people when they become a flavor of the month.
So for those of you who don't know, this Aura fella is a sports management major, was a sports management major at McNeese State, who's a team manager, and he would carry a boombox and lead the team out and dance and sing and all that stuff. And he got an NIL, a couple of NIL deals.
Oh, yeah.
He was becoming a big deal. And he was getting bonuses because of his visibility at the tournament.
That's right.
And it was kind of a cool story for about, 3 days until Will Wade, the coach of NC State, the coach of McNeese State, decides to take the coaching job at NC State and bring with him the team manager, or what's his name. So this went from being kind of a heartwarming story to like, oh, nope. This is everything I hate about NIL. You know, McNeese State can't even retain their damn team manager because of the money that college athletes are making. This, I went from being like, good for him, good for that kid, like, money grubbing capitalist, you little piece of crap, you're a mercenary,
I was still cool with Amir Khan because every interview I saw with him, he wasn't taking credit as if he were one of the players. Like he
wasn't getting too big a head.
No.
His head wasn't swelling up with it.
He definitely wasn't. And the players all seemed to still be very on board with him. Yet when on Saturday he showed up for their game against, who were they playing? They destroyed him, whoever it was. He showed up in a brand new jumpsuit that said Aura on the back of it. Like he was in full costume at this game. And the reports were that he had been getting a ton of phone calls over the previous 48 hours about more NIL deals because he's so visible and so well liked, and that's the part that started where I started to wonder. I'm like, all right, he's probably now making more money in NIL than any of these players, and
especially at McNeese State.
Yes,
it'd be one thing if it were at Duke or something, but at McNeese State, there's certainly that possibility.
So that's where I wondered. I'm like, man, I wonder if some of these players are starting to side-eye this thing a little bit and be like, all right. But they have nobody to blame but themselves. They played like a team on Saturday whose team manager is the most famous person on that team.
I think Amir Khan is a distraction at this
maybe,
point.
Maybe.
That's what you have to consider.
That's what I care to believe.
How long do you think he keeps this shtick up at NC State? I don't know if he's a senior or not. Plus, he was a transfer to begin with, if I recall properly.
Was he?
He didn't start off at McNeese.
Yeah, I don't know.
And so this guy, he's just a mercenary.
I guess. We'll see. Purdue is who
beat
them.
We need a transfer portal for managers.
For managers.
For lovable managers, yes.
Yeah. It's a one-man portal right now, and it's Amir Khan. So I think they got beat by Purdue. That's who it was. Man, if they
had... that would have been...
would have been U of H.
We should have seen them. I thought you would have loved it if they had won that next stage,
yes.
Because then they would have faced Houston.
Oh, yeah. That would have been great.
We could have thrown stuff at him.
Yes. Yeah. The only reason to go to the game, throw things at Amir Khan.
Instead of all these women that are probably throwing themselves at him.
Do you think? You think Aura? Are there Aura groupies out there, do you think?
Is he famous?
Yeah.
The answer is yes to both things.
That's true.
Yes.
And everybody's got a fetish for something. All right. So McNeese gets knocked out. So we lose the most famous person in this tournament that's not a head coach so far, knocked out. All right. So, Charles, you mentioned Charles Barkley as I was prefacing this segment with it not being very X-y and O-y. I would say this, at least I'm watching the games that, you know, like I've got my eyes on the games. Charles Barkley is in studio for, this is on Saturday, I believe. No, this might have been on Friday because Bryant was playing Michigan State. So that was a 2-15. It was on Friday. And they come in from the first half of the Illinois game. And here's what it sounded like. Ernie Johnson's first question to Charles Barkley, a very reasonable question. What were your takeaways from the first half of the Illinois game?
Ernie Johnson, Clark Kellogg, Kenny the Jet Smith, and Charles Barkley, biggest takeaway from the first half?
Well, I think that's a good question.
Thank you very much.
That's his job. Totally his job.
Came out of left field for you.
Would you expect Ernie not to ask you anything? What you expected to sit here and just let you?
Just look at you?
You know the game I'm watching. I'm watching Bryant against MSU.
You can't watch more than one game at a time. You watch all these TV shows at one time.
That's at night, man.
What is it now?
They're not all at the same time, man. One after the other. You know, Ernie, I'm not going to lie. I was paying attention to the Bryant score, so get at the Clark or Kenneth, please.
He didn't even say, you know, notice he didn't say the Brown game. He said the Brown score.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was even watching the Brown game.
Yeah. So it was, so that was Barkley. I like that he just didn't fake it or anything. He's just like, sorry, wasn't watching that one. You'll have to ask Kenneth.
Well, how could he have known that they were going to ask him about that game? How could it possibly have been on the actual teleprompter or on the handout they'd give him or anything
that? Yeah. I'll tell you where I've come around on something. When they first put Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith in the studio for the tournament, I was one of those snobs that was like, they don't watch all year. Why are these guys in here? I'm not learning anything from them. I've come around on this to where I just don't really care to learn anything. I just care to be entertained by Charles Barkley, and that entertained me.
Give me big stories. Give me glitzy things and what have you. Show me where the comebacks were. Yep. Show me where the upsets were. That's all I need.
I'm going to tell you one other place I think I've evolved a little bit, Seth, as someone who held serious hate in their heart towards the Duke University basketball program. I don't think I hate Duke anymore. Now, I don't love them, but I don't think I hold the malice in my heart anymore for Duke that I used to.
Is it as simple as, much like Alabama football, that when you have the guy that's the architect, almost the evil genius that's going to be in your life every single year, once the coach is gone, that it's different? You realize, like, oh, I guess I didn't hate Duke as much as I actually hated Mike Krzyzewski?
Yes, I think that's exactly what it is. I hated that rat-faced worm, Mike Krzyzewski.
Oh my God, he is.
He's a rat-faced worm, and he sounds like one.
That's the perfect description.
He sounds like this, and he talks. It'd be one thing if he talked with a real man's voice, but he's like...
So there's no part of you... Now, when Nick Saban gets on television, I think a lot of people that maybe formerly hated Saban or maybe just didn't like him now are starting to come around on him. Krzyzewski hasn't had that same effect when you see him on TV?
No. But we haven't seen much of him. I mean, Saban's very public. He's on game day every week.
Yeah.
Have we seen a lot? I mean, I've not seen a lot of Coach K. I hear everybody referring
that would
to
take,
him a lot.
Well, you're not dialing into, you know, ESPN's late night breakdowns of the Big East basketball and whatnot.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is... I was not a huge fan of John Shire when he was at Duke, mostly because he was at Duke at the time. But John Shire was playing high school basketball when I was living in Chicago. And I remember him. He was a legend in the Chicago area. And Pat Beverly was on, I believe he was on his own podcast this weekend. and was talking about John Shire. Pat Beverly, who is from, he's from the rough parts of Chicago. Shire's from the north suburbs, Glenbrook North. But Patrick Beverly was over the moon in his praise for John Shire.
John Shire story. Mind you, if anyone doesn't know John Shire, he played at Glenbrook North. When I say Roan, he never ducked any smoke from any athlete in Chicago. He never ducked any smoke. If you're from the west side of Chicago, your high school was in the hood, I'm on my way, I'm coming, I'm playing. If you were high ranked closer to me, it's okay, I'm coming to play. Any Christmas tournament, Proviso West, John Shire, yeah, the coach at Duke, I'm on my way, I'm playing. I don't give a who y'all think y'all is. They call him the White Mike. He was so cold. It was motherfuckers in the projects walking to his games. Wrong. You don't hear what I'm saying. Walking to his games at Proviso West. He had a stardom that no other kid had in Chicago. And his school wasn't even in Chicago. They were in Glenbrook North. He won national championship. I got a chance for me and him to actually be on the same team. Mind you, when we played in high school, he was Mr. Illinois. Now we're in a Miami Heat together. We're trying to make it. We're in the summer league together. We're on the same court together. I think someone throws an outlet. A guy reaches in by the name of Joe Ingles, pokes him in the eye. Legally blind.
Damn.
Can never play basketball again. Had to get on a helicopter off to another hospital just to fix his eye. Last time he played.
I didn't know that story, that an eye injury ended John Shire's basketball career. I had no idea about that. But when Beverly is talking about it, Proviso West is a Chicago high school that's in the inner city. And Glenbrook North, I guess, would play in a tournament there every year. And Beverly's saying dudes would walk through. Keep in mind, the time of year where you're playing tournaments in high school basketball in Chicago, the weather is like negative 10 degrees outside. Yeah, that's why walking to it is such a big deal.
he earned a cred in the community that you only get by being really, really, really good and fearless. He's basically the Eminem of basketball.
He's the
players.
Eminem of Chicago basketball. Yeah. So I don't hate Duke as much as I used to. I feel like I'm maturing a little bit.
There have been a lot of Duke basketball players that get an unfair reputation for being coddled rich kids because they go to Duke who are anything but that.
That's
like Christian Laettner, it was fun to try to think of him as he's just this coddled rich kid from Duke. Oh, no, his dad was a plumber. And just like it was,
he was from up where your people are from, right? Was he from upstate New York?
I think he was from New England.
I thought he was from upstate New York.
He could be 8 hours away from me and be from upstate New York.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't try to plug him in.
Pin
with some
all
of
upstate New York on you.
Yeah,
I don't do
like
that.
Rockland County posers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Monday. So yeah, I feel like I'm coming around on a few things. We were talking about the girl from Georgia earlier who the smiling mugshot girl, Lily. What's her name?
He was, by the way. Yeah, Leitner was from way upstate. He was from Angola.
Okay, where's that? What's that near?
It's over like what, like on the border of PA almost.
Okay.
Gotcha. Over now, I'm sorry, near like west of Buffalo even.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. We were talking about Lily Stewart was her name. She was the smiling mugshot girl from the University of Georgia who was pulled over for speeding, pulled out and got pulled over for speeding again like moments later. And that led to some speeding ticket stories on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I got a speeding ticket taking my son to daycare. I accidentally peeled out and got pulled over in the daycare parking lot and given an excessive acceleration ticket.
Ooh.
So this is in front of all the other parents and things like that.
I love you accidentally peeled out. That's
at daycare.
Awesome. But meanwhile, does the texter give their name? Is it a male or female? Do we know?
No.
In my mind, I'm envisioning a woman. That kid, if he's old enough to recognize it, thinks that his mom is just the badass.
Pretty badass.
The baddest badass, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's the way we roll in this family.
Yeah.
Watch out, little punks. You're going to try to bully me today? Yeah.
If it were high school, that's the only scenario under which it's cool to have your parents pick you up at schools. If you have a mom who gets pulled over for speeding and then gets pulled over again for peeling out in the parking lot.
She like throws a blunt out the window and then peels
out. Other than that, not cool. Not cool. A blunt. Seth, you're not lying. This is a text. Adaptive cruise control changed my life. My biggest pet peeve is people who can't maintain a speed.
Yeah, yeah. The adaptive cruise control is just nice. You just sit and just cruise in the right lane, and I stop worrying about. God, I spent so many years of my life wasting time that I could be enjoying driving and just enjoying the drive, like trying to get to a place 10 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well,
usually it's going to a place that I don't even want to go where I'm going, but I got to get there 10 minutes earlier.
What if it's an event that Tom Coughlin's running? Then you need to be there 10 minutes earlier.
But I've already left 2 hours earlier than I should to account for
to be at that one.
Other issues or anything. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. The one time I was ever pulled over, I was going 80 on the Grand Parkway. Speed limit was 70. Oh, you get pulled over going 80 and it's 70.
Yeah.
Said people were flying past me going near 100 miles an hour. State trooper pulled me over, gave me a ticket immediately. At least he didn't make you wait around. I said, good afternoon, officer. And he said, I'm giving you a ticket for going 80 and a 70. Didn't even try talking or anything. And then he walked off. State troopers suck. Now, let me be clear. That was the texter saying that, not Sean T. Pendergast.
Okay, so this is in the annals of great moments in passive aggression. This is one of my all-time bests. Brandy and I were leaving my sister's house once on Thanksgiving. And we're going to drive up to her parents' house. And it was going to be, the weather was kind of bad. That we'd gotten, it wasn't an argument necessarily, but like it was, she had angered me. And, you know, like all things, it would turn out later that I was in the wrong. But I was angry in the moment. And usually one of the only things Brandy and I'll quibble about is sometimes if I am driving too fast. And I usually don't go more than 10 miles per hour over the speed limit. So anyway, we're driving in New Jersey at night in bad weather conditions. And I'm like, well, fine. I'm just going to be the model husband here, and I'm going to drive the exact speed limit. And we're on the New Jersey Turnpike or whatever it was. I think it was I-80. And it's like it was in a work zone, a construction zone, where there was no construction going on. The speed limit was 45, and people were just flying past us, going like 75, 80. And I'm sitting there like, nope, going to drive the speed limit. Didn't say anything. Hands it 10 and 2. And I was so terrified. It was like the most dangerously reckless thing I could have been doing at that moment was going 45 while every single person out on the road was going 75 or 80. And we kept it that way for a good 45 minutes to an hour.
Oh.
And yeah.
Did you keep looking over at Brandy while you were driving?
No, I didn't look straight ahead. 10 and 2 scanning the road in front of me, being the perfect safe law-abiding citizen. Damn it.
Oh man. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Keep texting them in if you got good speeding ticket stories. That's a good one for the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610. All right, the biggest name free agent still out there. Visited with a team for 6 hours, and yet still we wait. Not a big surprise. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Good to be with you on a Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. So apparently over the weekend, Seth, Aaron Rodgers met with the Steelers for 6 hours at their building. Talked to
6 hours?
6 hours. I can't imagine sitting down and meeting with anybody for 6 hours.
That's about how long a mushroom trip takes.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah,
they probably just sat around a communal fire and and chatted it up.
We're going to do the meeting on my terms, boys. So here you go. Here's the mushrooms. This is going to be my kind of meeting. And see how much you want me. This is Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. This is the update on the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers. Quote, they've already got a contract offer standing out to Rodgers in place, so they talked about fit. He met with Arthur Smith, the OC, Mike Tomlin, the head coach, owner Art Rooney, GM Omar Khan, so he's meeting with every layer that matters to him. Fowler says, in fact, I was told the Steelers wanted to make this meeting happen so much, they skipped Michigan's pro day yesterday, which if you know the Steelers, that's a big deal. The whole contingent goes to every big pro day. They stayed in town to meet with Rodgers. And look, I checked with a team source that said they're aggressively pursuing this. He's number one on their radar. And quote, he left the building without a deal. So
okay, they've already established that they're very willing to take a chance on a guy like Russell Wilson, aging veteran. Doesn't quite necessarily seem like he fit the Steelers' ethos and history and all of that. Russell Wilson did not seem like a Steelers type of guy.
No.
And it's weird because Aaron Rodgers, despite having played in one of the ultimate blue-collar types of teams, the Packers, for his entire career pretty much, doesn't quite seem like a Steelers type of guy. The six-hour sit-down, I think there's almost no way that doesn't end up with both sides feeling better about each other than if unless a guy is a complete D-bag. And I mean, the Jets did the same thing. They had a nice long conversation with Aaron Rodgers. And I think Aaron Rodgers in his mind is probably all about, yeah, I really like this stuff you do, Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator. And yeah, I could totally see fitting in with all of this. And then there's, you know, it's a matter of sustaining the relationship after that.
Yeah.
The fact that they sat down for 6 hours, and I'm guessing Arthur Smith said some things that really appealed to Aaron Rodgers, the developing a run game, a play action, all these things that can make life easier for him, I bet it really appealed to Aaron Rodgers. And I would guess that this gets done.
I think it gets done. Why the delay? I do wonder, okay, there's no deal in place for one of two reasons. Either Aaron Rodgers is enjoying the attention, which I think is firmly in play, that he was not the domino that needed to fall at the beginning of free agency for things to start moving. That was Sam Darnold. He now is the domino that needs to fall, at least in the quarterback world, you know, versus a team going with Russell Wilson or making a trade for Kirk Cousins. I mean, we're down to the bargain DVD bin here. So he's either It's one of these two or both of these things. One, he's just enjoying the attention of finally being the guy who everybody's waiting on. I think there is an element of Aaron Rodgers to that. When it comes to just the football decision, there's not really another situation that makes sense for him to be waiting for at this point. You know, the Vikings have said we've moved on. You know, unless he's trying to get the Vikings back engaged again. Other than just the fact that he bought a house near New York, that's the only reason I can think of he'd want to play for the Giants is that he lives there in New York and it's New York. That's a bad situation. You're going to be going to a team where the GM and the head coach are completely on the hot seat and on the verge of getting fired. I'm wondering, Seth, if he's trying to decide between playing for the Steelers or just staying in shape and being the guy that kind of vultures the best situation in season, possibly.
I don't know. I think we got to remember this, too. I think for Aaron Rodgers, I would imagine, as it would go for any athlete who's in his 40s and only has a couple of years left at most, he wants to be careful about it. So, like, whether you hate Aaron Rodgers or love Aaron Rodgers, I don't doubt that he genuinely wants to feel right about it. And he's in a point of time where there's a month before the draft. It's not like it was when he was with the Packers and they couldn't get a hold of him and they're desperately trying to make a decision. Mm-hmm. This is a team for which he's not a current employee. They haven't paid him a single cent. He doesn't owe them anything. And I think that he's genuinely got some time to maybe sit with it and have a conversation with them and feel it out and figure. And maybe he wants to go visit the Titans too. It makes the most sense. I mean, the Titans could sign Aaron Rodgers and still also draft Cam Ward.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, you know, Aaron Rodgers could feel awesome about any meeting with the Titans, but still feel like, all right, I'm three bad games away from getting benched for a rookie.
Yeah, that's
I think that I think the Steelers make the most sense, and if there's any delay right now, I don't think it's because Aaron Rodgers is trying to milk it for drama or anything. I think he's probably just wanting to feel that he wants to feel right about it before he does it.
I wonder if guys like Rodgers look at what happened with Kirk Cousins last year, where he signs this really lucrative deal.
Yeah.
So I don't feel sorry for Kirk Cousins in this case, and he's coming off an Achilles. So he got, for a guy coming off an Achilles who'd won one playoff game in his career, Kirk Cousins really doesn't have anything, or didn't last year have anything to complain about, I don't think, when they went ahead and drafted Michael Penix with the 8th overall pick. And yet we know that egos get involved and guys want to feel like they're the guy, and I'm sure there was a part of Kirk Cousins that felt like he was looking over his shoulder the entire time, and rightfully so. Michael Penix wound up being the starting quarterback for the Falcons at the end of the season last year.
Yeah.
So it played out that way. Now, Cousins is still on the Falcons right now. They just paid him a $10 million roster bonus, so maybe he's going to be around again there this year. I do wonder, like someone like Aaron Rodgers, who's in a very similar situation. You know, he's just got cut loose by the Jets. He's a free agent. The Giants and the Titans make a lot of sense, at least. Like, that's an upgrade for them at quarterback, Aaron Rodgers is. Yet I think it's a near lock that the Titans draft a quarterback with the number one overall pick of Cam Ward. And I feel like there's a really good chance that even if the Giants signed Aaron Rodgers, that they might draft Shedeur Sanders with the third overall pick. I guess the question would be with the Steelers. They're picking 21st overall.
Yeah.
Like, there's probably very little chance of that happening with the Steelers, I would think.
Right. I don't think, for one, there's no way in hell that organization is trading all the way up to the top of the first round.
No.
To try for one of these quarterbacks, especially.
Yeah.
And likewise, I don't think there's not a Michael Penix in this draft. I think that a team might talk themselves into just, the scenarios that make sense for Aaron Rodgers right now, given the teams that we know about publicly, the Steelers make a whole lot of sense. I think it's probably more a question of, are the Steelers comfortable with Aaron Rodgers? Because he comes with all this bad PR about him wanting his personally hand-selected offensive coordinator, the stories about how he operated in Green Bay, where he and the head coach didn't seem to be on the same page at times. Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, might have final say on this.
Mm-hmm.
Did he sit down with Aaron Rodgers and feel like, okay, yeah, he's going to want to run my offense and he's going to be on board with the way I operate?
Yeah. We're getting a lot
do
of...
Do you think he would be?
Do I think Aaron Rodgers would be on board with running Arthur Smith's offense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he should be, like, at this stage of his career.
Being more of a scheme guy instead of just kind of winging it on his own.
I think he needs to be at this point. I think he should be.
Because Arthur Smith is old school in a lot of ways in terms of the way he wants to call plays. I mean, remember, in Tennessee, it was a pain in the ass because they were so good at the play action. They were going to run the ball. They were going to set up and make whichever quarterback was in look like the best version of himself because there were play action opportunities. And Rodgers' reputation in Green Bay was that, man, McCarthy would want to run the ball, and Rodgers would just, nope, we're passing.
Yeah.
Check out, check out, check out. That's got to be... I mean, that's a big thing. That was Aaron Rodgers going to be comfortable just running the scheme?
6 hours, I would imagine that they came up several times, I would think.
Yeah.
So hopefully they both got clarity on how they feel about that. Now, look, here's the thing, too. Aaron Rodgers is still sitting here delaying. Meanwhile, you've got Cam Hayward, possible future teammate, on his podcast last week saying, hey, man, if you want to be a Steeler, be a Steeler.
I ain't doing that darkness retreat. I don't need any of that crap. Like, either you want to be a Pittsburgh Steeler or you don't. That's simple. That's the pitch. Like, if you want me to recruit, that's the recruiting pitch. You know, yeah. Pittsburgh Steelers, if you want to be part of it, so be it. If you don't, no skin on my back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Rodgers would respect that.
Yeah.
That's just a guy being blunt with it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of speeding ticket stories on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. This goes back to a story that we hit in Acknowledge Me an hour ago of a Georgia co-ed who's been arrested multiple times in the last few weeks. Her first arrest was speeding. Her second arrest was... she got a speeding ticket. Her first arrest was driving recklessly moments after getting a speeding ticket. Some of you texting in, got pulled over doing 90 in a 25 when I was 17 years old.
Oh my God.
The officer said it was the end of his shift or else I would have been going to jail. So the officer was like, look, I got to get home and watch The Sopranos or something like that.
90 in a 25.
Think about where speed limits are 25 miles an hour and how dangerous that is.
That's like there's pedestrians schools. 90 and a 25.
90 and a 25. Yeah.
It's 17?
Yeah.
Plus you get, I don't know what the current laws are, but a lot of times when you get a ticket like that in your first year or two, even if it's not as egregious as that, you lose your license immediately.
Yeah.
You're just, wow.
And insurance rates and everything else. Oh, man. Text message, I got pulled over going 23 in a school zone. But I got out of it because the officer circled 3 a.m. instead of 3 p.m. on the ticket.
Oh, he got up on a technicality.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't have been school. Boy, that's interesting, though, too, because even if I might say, I wonder if he went to court and said, yeah, it was 3:25 a.m. It was weird. I don't know why I did. That is another little trick of the trade, everybody. It's that a lot of times if you show up in court to contest it, the cop's like, I'm not going to take half my day to go to court.
Right.
So I can prove that I was in the right on this traffic
ticket.
Have
you ever?
Sometimes the cops just don't show up for the court date.
Have you ever done defensive driving to get out of a ticket?
No.
Okay.
No.
I have. They have the comedy ones. You can go to a comedy club.
Oh, yeah.
Those are kind of fun. You know,
it's not. How long is it? Is it like, it's like 5 or 6 hours?
Yeah.
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I don't remember exactly how long it was. I remember being very excited about getting out of the ticket and not having my insurance rates go up, though. I'm like, oh, this is cool. I get to sit and eat and watch a stand-up comic teach me how to drive better. Yeah.
Was it actually funny, or was it kind of like, all right, this isn't as bad as something that's
the one
dry?
I went to was pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, but I was wasted. No, I'm just joking. Just kidding.
I was just trying to sober up in time to drive home.
Yeah, exactly. Irony, thy name is Pendergast. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Monday. All right, one of the newest Texans. The move that I think is probably being the one most widely lauded by Nick Caserio gets a big stamp of approval from a prominent voice in the football community. We will have that for you. Coming up next.
From the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Good to be with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Cougs had a great weekend. Rockets split this weekend. I was so mad at the Rockets that they lost last night because it took some of the starch out of Amen Thompson making Tyler Hero his son, basically, on Friday against the Miami Heat. That was fun to see Amen Thompson schooling Tyler Hero on Friday. That was cool.
Amen Thompson, probably one of the more underrated keys to the playoffs that in Houston people are very much plugged into, but elsewhere they think of him as like a nice wing player.
Yeah.
I think that's Amen Thompson going off the way he did was really, really cool to watch.
It was cool on Friday, and yet he didn't play much of the fourth quarter at all yesterday. So I'm still, Rockets, I'm a little mad at you today. I'll be over it by tomorrow. Don't worry.
The other intriguing thing about the Rockets as of late is the two big men lineup where both Şengün and Adams are in, and they were working that yesterday. It just not with the same level of effectiveness. The rebounding was not a strength through the first three quarters.
No,
and especially when they're out there and there's no Jokic. Just let's take advantage of this, huh? Mm-hmm. So it felt like a missed opportunity. It's just. I don't have nearly the same level of frustration that I would have when they were in the middle of their rough stretch before this win streak began, because they've by and large been a much more consistent basketball team.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, I mean, I just don't want to make excuses. I mean, when the Rockets' shots aren't going in, I'm emotionally dead inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you make these shots that you sometimes make, but usually don't anyway.
For rooting for a good team, you must be emotionally dead quite a bit. That's not a good shooting basketball team.
I know. I'm way more engaged with offensive rebounds than I am with actual shooting percentage. That's why kind of weird, the weird relationship we have with this basketball team.
It is. Chris Long. Greenlight Podcast, former Philadelphia Eagle, really good defensive lineman in the league for a number of years. On his podcast, he is very in tune with the Eagles, obviously. So he's a big C.J. Gardner-Johnson guy. Thinks this is a huge pickup for the Houston Texans.
C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Eagles trading him to the Texans. On the Texans side of things, man, that secondary, we talk a lot about how fast and violent that secondary is. I'm sensing a pattern. Love C.J.'s energy. Love his speed, the way he'll throw his hat in there. It's his energy. It's his dog mentality. It's the speed with which he plays, the intensity that it elevates everybody around him. I think you're going to Houston where he's got some guys just like him. The physicality in a group that features Lassiter, Stingley, Petrie, this dude, they're going to be taking heads off. You talk about trying to get on the perimeter in the run game and seeing bodies flying downhill and catching a check down and picking your teeth up off the turf in Houston. Like that is the visual that I think D'Amico Ryans has for the secondary, and I really like it.
It's one of the more unexpected things going into this offseason for the hot points on what the Texans really needed. The promise of Kalen Bullock has kind of, at least in my case, it kind of made me forget that, like, all right, I mean, yeah, you can get by with Eric Murray or MJ Stewart or what have you, but you still really don't have a guy you feel good about alongside Kalen Bullock out there. And Kalen Bullock is still a work in progress. He played like a rookie in a lot of ways and respects last year, but he got better as the year went along. But he's still going to have some young player glitches and blips along the way. I mean, but you go into this year where last year in the offseason, Jalen Petrie playing the nickelback position was a huge question mark. We just didn't know how it was going to look. He was coming off of a disappointing year. You had Lasseter, a rookie, who, oh no, didn't run a fast 40 at the combine. And you had Kalen Bullock, who most people were upset about wasn't a veteran free agent that you would sign instead of Kalen Bullock. And then you had Eric Murray or MJ Stewart, whoever else the other safety was going to be. I don't want to say it's a 180-degree turnaround, but there was really only one position you felt good about in the secondary going into last season that you felt rock solid about, and that was Derek Stingley.
Yeah.
If he could stay healthy.
Yeah, even that. Yeah, right. You had the health black cloud hanging over that whole thing.
So, yeah, that's one of the – it's kind of tippy-toed its way into all of a sudden being – everything that Chris Long just talked about, because it happened gradually. It didn't happen with a couple of big draft picks here or that. It was Derek Stingley working out as a guy that could start day one. It was Kalen Bullock coming along during the season. It was Jalen Petrie playing the way he did at the nickelback position. And then now it's MJ Stewart added to a defense that had the second most interceptions in the league last year. It is, I'm not going to get ahead of myself because you still got to go out and play football games, but the style and brand of football that DeMeco likes to play, it feels like adding C.J. Gardner-Johnson to the mix, it just feels like you added a keg of dynamite to everything.
Do you?
The guy's got 12 interceptions in his last two full seasons. He only played a few games in 2023. But going over the last 3 years, he's got 12 interceptions in regular season games.
This is where I would be real curious if there were other teams talking to the Eagles about C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Like, he's a productive... very productive player, like you've said. What is it? 13 picks over the last 12.
It's in the last three. It's like in the last 35 regular season games, he's got 12 picks.
So he's very productive. Yeah, like he productive in a big way, like the most important way. He turns other teams over. So I'm curious if there were other teams talking about giving something to the Eagles for C.J. Gardner-Johnson. In which case, if there were multiple teams. The fact that they chose the deal where the main thing you're getting back is Kenyon Green is kind of remarkable, you know, like and probably plays into the fact like that would truly mean that you actually did get something like the Kenyon Green actually brought value as opposed to just being like, OK, we'll duke you this guy. That's why I'm like, this guy's a good football player, C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And so I think there's a lot of people like, that's all you could get for him was Kenyon Green. Like, no, it may be where there were two or three teams talking to the Eagles, not offering anything great.
It's one of those things where they were probably going to cut him for cap reasons regardless. So they were looking to see what was the best thing we could get. And another couple teams probably were maybe giving up a sixth or a seventh round pick or what have you. But they like the upside of Kenyon Green.
That's I'm just curious. Were the Texans the only one, or were there multiple teams in on C.J. Gardner-Johnson?
There were, so it was 13 picks in the last 32 regular season games.
It's a lot.
Or something like that.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I think with Kenyon Green, the frustrating thing was that for us as fans was that I think Caserio still saw the upside in Kenyon Green, but we'd also seen the inconsistency, the injuries, everything else. I mean, the thing that finally got him benched this year ultimately was Kenyon Green getting injured on a play in which he allowed a sack versus C.J. Stroud. It couldn't have been more perfect. Like, finally, okay, he's benched now. Now, after you almost get C.J. Stroud murdered by Quinnen Williams again, yet again. But I don't want to say luckily, but as fate would have it, Kenyon Green himself gets injured on that play, and that's when he gets benched. That's how much Caserio was intrigued by the upside of Kenyon Green.
So I
think the Eagles look at Kenyon Green, and they're probably intrigued by his upside too. But they also happen to have Jeff Stoutland, who's one of the best offensive line coaches in history, on their staff. So that's where that probably looked more enticing to them than a sixth or a fifth round pick from somebody else.
I would just be curious how many teams may have made the call about that, and if Kenyon Green was what they chose is interesting. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, more speeding ticket stories. I got out of a speeding ticket because the cop locked the keys in the car, so I offered him a ride back to the office, and he declined.
Oh, but he also was like, I don't know enough of you.
It's like, oh, my God. It's like Roscoe on the Dukes of... Who pulled you over? Roscoe from the Dukes of Hazzard?
I got a question for the law enforcement.
I locked my keys in my car.
I got a question for the law enforcement officers that are listening. Is the whole end of the month thing, is that just a myth or is there a quota?
The quotas?
Yeah. I always, to this day, I still am extra careful towards the end of the month because I assume that there's quotas that some cops are trying to go out and
you,
fill.
Man. Like, thinking, that's some next level thinking right there.
Oh, I thought that was standard.
No, but like thinking about it while I'm driving, I never pay attention to what the date is or anything like
oh,
that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I just grew up with it.
Yeah.
I think that's probably one of those things that I thought everybody thought about, but maybe no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that a myth or not, or is that just my crazy old father?
Yeah, is it real? How about this? Got arrested for racing, going 104 and a 55, but the trooper let us go because he had arrested the other guy's dad a week prior and felt bad for us. Where the hell did you grow up, Talladega? Oh, my God. Hey, did you see that? I mean, what could possibly go wrong with this? Over the weekend, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins both bought Lamborghinis and were racing them around on the highways in Miami. They were like...
Oh, no.
Speeding around. Yeah, like filming themselves and things like that.
Filming themselves?
Well, someone's filming them driving around. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but it's actually worth if they were actually filming as they were driving. Like, could you tell if they were actually going super fast or were they just kind of gunning it here and there?
I know in Ja'Marr Chase's tweet, he talked about wanting to go around and test these things out. You know, like he was alluding to driving fast.
Yeah, it's hard to test a Lamborghini out without going way faster than
the speed limit. Right. So, and you never know. Like from the video, like exactly how fast they're going, but it was like I'm watching this. I'm going, even if they're going like just around the speed limit, this is really stupid to put out there on video for any reason.
I was never intrigued by Lamborghinis all that much until I was over at an event at Zadok Jewelers, mm-hmm. and one of the guys there had a Lamborghini that was built. It was a touring Lamborghini, so it was basically built for these long races across the desert and everything. So it had like badass. Off-road almost type tires on it. It had a luggage rack on top and everything. It was pretty cool, man. But I don't know. Mostly I just wouldn't trust myself on Houston roads with a Lamborghini. I'd hit a pothole way too often.
Yes. Yeah, the roads here. Yeah, you damage a $300,000 vehicle. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We head into the 9 o'clock hour. Let's circle back to the Astros. Opening day is on Thursday. I feel like we're awaiting decisions on about three or four spots on the roster. Is the biggest decision for this team an either or could both these guys make the club? We'll talk about that. I'll tell you who it is coming up next.